We're doing Netivot Shalom on the Parsha. Netivot Shalom is the Rebbe of Slonim. He passed away only a few years ago. And this work is known as the basic work in Hasidut that is like introductory. It's the most basic work. If you want to learn Hasidut, this is considered in the yeshivas, the opening steps into Hasidut. So we've been learning Netivot Shalom in Machon Meir for about 6-7 years. I'm still at the opening steps, but I enjoy it every time. So, Netivot Shalom, the Rebbe Yoslanim, who passed away this decade, I don't remember if it's 4 years ago, 5 years ago, he was around till very recently. So the pasuk says, "Velo natan Hashem lachem lev ladat ad hayom hazeh." Till today, Hashem hasn't granted you the heart to understand what I'm teaching you. Chazal say, from this pasuk we learn that it takes a student 40 years to really understand what his Rebbe's teaching. You hear it, you understand it on one level, but it takes 40 years of playing around with it in your mind till you start appreciating, till you really appreciate and understand the depth of what you were taught. So, Rashi explains that on that day, Moshe gave the Torah to the Levim. And Am Yisrael came to Moshe and they said to him, "Moshe Rabbeinu, we were also at Sinai. We also accepted the Torah. Why? We want you to give us a copy of the Torah too. Why are you giving it only to your tribe, the Levites?" Now in the last class we discussed that the Levim had a special role. I suggested that I don't know if the rest of Am Yisrael leaving Egypt was literate. I don't understand how slaves, second and third generation slaves, could be literate. So I said the tribe of Levi, it would seem, were the natural leaders of Israel, because it would seem that leaving Egypt, the tribe of Levi, were educated, and the rest of Israel, it's questionable how educated they were. Kuzari writes they were very, very sharp, that they were a questioning people, that they wouldn't buy into something so easily. But nonetheless, we have to wonder, where did they get their education if they were being enslaved?
But there's a difference between being sharp and being educated.
Agreed. I agree. So Rashi quotes that when Am Yisrael complained, "Why are you putting the Levites in charge of the Torah?" Moshe was very happy. And that's when he said to them, "Today you became the nation, because today I see you really want a connection to Hashem." In the book Torat Avot, he quotes from the grandfather of Lechovitz. What was unique about that day? Moshe Rabbeinu saw Am Yisrael in Egypt. He saw them at the crossing of the Yam Suf. He saw them all receiving the Torah. In every instance, they had to dedicate their lives. They risked their lives to leave Mitzrayim. They risked their lives going into the Yam Suf. They risked their lives. It was a very awesome process receiving the Torah. What was unique today? Today, Moshe says, now you've become Hashem's nation. On that day, Moshe saw how Am Yisrael loves Hashem. Am Yisrael wants Torah. And that's what Moshe saw, that the idea of Ladat Hashem, to know Hashem, to see the greatness of Hashem, to hear Him, you can't do that unless you love Him. There are elements of growth that can only come once one is connected. If you love, if you're willing to be dedicated, that's when you can connect to the idea, I want to know what Hashem's teaching me. This is what we saw in the Chazon Ish, that Torah is different than other forms of knowledge. In science, you study, if you have the IQ, you'll understand. In Torah, you could have the IQ, and there are levels of understanding that are contingent on where your soul is. It's not just the science. You can learn the words, you could have the system, you can know Q and A, but do you really connect? Do you really get the deeper concepts? There are levels of understanding you can't get to unless you have, your soul is in the right place. And that's what Moshe said. "You guys, now I know that you want to really connect to Hashem, because you want the Torah." When a Jew has an affinity, a love for, a connection, a desire to Torah, so then he reaches the stage where his heart starts understanding, his eyes will see, his ears will hear. A person asked me to do a circumcision while ago, and I had just met one of the oldest rabbis who are Mohalim alive today. And in our conversation, he said to me, this old rabbi, he said, anytime someone asks you to do a circumcision, you have to ask them whether they have hemophilia. So I always asked if there were medical issues in the family. I never asked if there was hemophilia. I never asked it that way. And he said to me, you have to ask if they have hemophilia. So this old man said it. I listened. The next person that asked me to do a circumcision, aside from all the questions, is there a medical history? I asked, does one of you have hemophilia? And suddenly they said, yes. And I said, oh boy, the doctors didn't write that on the release papers. And I didn't ask that at the bris. I asked that like 5 days earlier. But I said, you know, then we have to make sure the baby doesn't have hemophilia. Who said you could do a bris? So I told this story over to a friend of mine who's also an old Moel. And I said to him, you know, it's funny. I wouldn't have asked, but this old Moel who I met told me, you always have to ask, so I asked. He said, you know, I don't either ask. He said, I never ask. Okay. A month passes, I get another phone call, someone asked me to do a bris. And this time again, I ask, does one of you have hemophilia? And again, the guy tells me, yeah, my wife has hemophilia. So I said, wow. Wow. Twice. So I called up the other Moel and I said, you know, it's so interesting. I met this old Moel and I told you, and you said you never asked before, and I never asked before. And ever since I started asking, in 1 month I've had two people ask me to do a bris where the parent has hemophilia. So he said to me, why are you surprised? I said, what do you mean? You and I never asked this question before. And when I asked them, is there any medical history, they didn't answer. They said, no, everything's fine. It was only because I worded it the way that old person told me that we got this answer. So he said to me, why are you surprised? I said, what do you mean? Why shouldn't I be surprised? He said, you're doing a mitzvah. Haven't you learned yet? When you do a mitzvah, Hashem helps you. So now, this friend of mine is a Yemenite. He's not one of these EGBG people. When he was asked to give a eulogy for Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, he didn't talk about miracles. He spoke about Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and all his practical halachic rulings. He's a very practical-minded person. He doesn't like things like this. I said, why are you suddenly talking that way? So he says to me, you know, I taught hundreds of students how to circumcise. I said, yeah. He said, once I had a student that was too arrogant. And I decided that he is so arrogant, I have to teach him a lesson because otherwise he's going to mess up. You can't be arrogant as a doctor. You're a moel, you can't be arrogant. So when this student came to one circumcision that I arranged for him, someone asked me to do a circumcision. I said, okay, I'll bring my student and I'll be on top and we'll take care of it. I told that student, I want you to do this circumcision with gloves. So the student came to do the circumcision and he couldn't get it right. He wasn't used to using gloves and everything kept slipping and sliding and the family yelled at him and they threatened they'd sue him and he really botched up. You know, the circumcision came out kosher, but it took him a long time. It was difficult for him. And he said to me afterwards, why'd you do that to me? And I said to him, you were too arrogant. You had to learn that things don't always go right and you have to deal even when they don't go right, and you had to learn your lesson. And the guy said, why'd you do that to me? Why'd you make me wear gloves? I never did a circumcision with gloves. You knew I didn't know how to do it with gloves. He said, fine, but I was watching. It came out kosher. You just got complications. And the student was very upset at him. 2 years later, he's telling me the story. He gets a phone call from the same family, not from the family. He gets a phone call from a friend of the family. The friend of the family says, I'm a Moel. They just had another baby. They asked me to do the circumcision, but I'm not doing it. I'm giving it to you. So he said, okay, I'll do it. So then the friend says, but I just want you to know they have AIDS. The parents have AIDS, the parents of the baby. So he said, wait a second, this is the family that 2 years ago I brought a student and they did it with gloves and they were so upset at me and they're willing to let me do it again. So So he said, yeah, that family. So he called back his student. He said, you know, 2 years ago, you were so upset at me, I told you to do it with gloves. I didn't know, and you didn't know. No one told us then. The family had AIDS. But look at how their Bon Shalom watched over us. I decided I have to figure out some way to make the bris difficult for you, that you shouldn't be such a hotshot. So the first time he said, I never before asked a student to do it. I never again asked a student to do it. In your case, I decided you need this experience. I said, put on gloves. Don't do it without gloves. And so he said to me, so you're surprised? You're doing a mitzvah. Hashem is helping you where you don't even understand that he's helping you. So when I said that to him, I said, you know, it's interesting because someone asked me last Thursday, you guys were here, someone said in the 21st century, how do you approach Rosh Hashanah and see Hashem as king in the 21st century? He said, go tell them this story. Tell them you want to see. Go look. Tells us in Tivat Shalom, it's not accurate. Because you could look at stories and say, I don't see anything. If you have a desire, if there's an affinity, if there's a connection, then a person can recognize things, then he can see things, then he can hear things. You can look at everything and say, maybe yeah, maybe no. Huh? There are always answers. What Moshe Rabbeinu got excited about was that Am Yisrael had expressed a desire, a love, a connection. When Am Yisrael said, Moshe, don't give the Torah only to them, we want Torah too. Moshe said, okay, then you're in a different place. But now I can understand that you will gain an understanding of Torah. After 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu says, now I see you guys really love Torah. He says when his grandfather used to go over this, he would pause and say, Chavivus. Chavivus means an affectionate connection. That's what a person has to develop with himself. He would just sit there and ponder that. Affection. Affection. Can we arouse affection? When I became bar mitzvah, they taught me that when you take off tefillin, before you wrap them up, you give a kiss to the tefillin. So that's what I always do. I kiss the tefillin. A few weeks ago, I was reviewing, we had a class on the laws of tefillin, I was reviewing the laws of tefillin, and I noticed that in the halacha it says the opposite. It says when you take out the tefillin, you should kiss the tefillin. So I couldn't remember if I do that. Do I kiss my tefillin before I put them on? And one of the people who was listening to the class said, of course you kiss your tefillin. What does that mean? You haven't seen them for 24 hours, you don't kiss them? So I looked at him and I was thinking, he's so right. I know that after Chol HaMoed, we're going to approach Sukkot here in Israel. After Chol HaMoed, I have 7 days where I don't put on tefillin. The night before, I'm getting, right? I'm going to get to put on tefillin tomorrow morning. I can't wait, right? When Sukkot is finally over, I know tomorrow morning, I haven't had the opportunity to wear tefillin all Yom Tov long. It's been 8 days. I miss them. The next morning, I take the tefillin in my hand. That's excitement. But every morning, I don't think about it. I don't say, hey, it's been 24 hours since I saw you, right? But this person had the right idea. That's chavivut. That's where the affection that one can develop and can have for mitzvot. And this is true for all mitzvot. A lot of it is an attitude. You know, in halacha it says, ha'oseh tefilato keva in tefilato techanunim. If one makes his prayer a set thing, then his prayer isn't really an expression of his needs, right? What does that mean? Two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion is that he views the tefillah as, I gotta go. This is the time. This is the prayer. I do it. Second opinion says, he might not view it, but he says it. If a person says, oh no, it's downing time, I gotta go. What do you mean, oh no? Oh yes. But if his expression shows tefillato keva, that I have a regimen, I gotta go daven. There's no feeling. So then Hashem says, that's not the prayer I want to listen to. It's two opinions in Gemara. Which one do we rule like? Both. Shulchan Aruch rules both. That our attitude and our expression. Very often our expression is what does it. I come home Friday night and I sing Shalom Aleichem. So I will often dance with the kids. Because when you dance with them, you show them Shabbos is special. You will, Be'ezrat Hashem, have guests in your home. How will kids view the guests? Will they say, oh no, I don't get to sit in my favorite seat, and the guest is going to go yapping the whole meal, and I'm going to have to listen to his boring stories, and at the end of the meal, Abba and Ima will stay up with the guest, and they won't be with me? Or do children get excited over guests? Attitude is a major component of our lives and our performance of mitzvot. When you get excited and you say, oh, we have a guest, it's amazing, and the guest becomes, wow, we're lucky to have a guest, so then the kids are happy that there's a guest. We once had one of the kids tell a guest, are you staying tonight? And the guest said, no. And the kid said, I'll give you my bed. I looked at him and I said, wow, okay, that's very nice. So somehow the kid got the right idea. Don't ask me how. I know, it's probably my wife, because I can't take credit for that one. But attitude, chavivut, that's the major component, and it defines a lot of what we do. The Chafetz Chaim said, you have a person who works all day, and he only has 5 minutes of learning Torah. But all day he's thinking, when can I get to those 5 minutes? Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's a person that's learned all day. Because all day he's saying, if I could, I would. But right now I have to do other things. I can't wait to get to those 5 minutes. So then all day I'm working towards that. That's the highlight of my day, like the Kuzari writes. The Kuzari says it about tefillah. He says, what's the chassid? The chassid is someone that ends his davening and he says, when do I get to talk to God again? He goes from prayer to prayer. He's waiting for the next opportunity to talk to Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the chassid. Life is about connection. Those of you who have experienced a relationship with a woman know what that feeling can be. You wait for the next opportunity. When can I, again, those of you who haven't, Bezrat Hashem will. You'll see when you get excited, when you get engaged, how much you're waiting. When's the next opportunity? I can talk to the person, be with the person. And it's not about intimacy in the physical sense. It's about connection. That's chavivut. That's affection. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw in Am Yisrael with regards to the Torah. That's what opens the doors of connecting. Says the Rebbe of Slonim, a mitzvah without affection is like a body without a soul. And that's what Chazal said. Why do we blow shofar before Shmoneh Esrei? And we blow shofar again when we're in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. Why? So the Gemara says, to confuse the Satan. Rashi says, the Satan won't be able to say bad things about us because he'll see how much we love mitzvot. Meaning, when he sees that we're trying to get it right, I'll get it before, I'll get it after, I'll get it during. I have an affection for the mitzvah in every way I can. So then he says, okay, what can I say about them? That's the idea of Bikurim. The Medrash says, Hashem created the world for Bikurim. Why is Bikurim so important? What's so unique about it? There are 612 other mitzvot. Right. Some mitzvot are much harder than Bikurim. Bikurim. The mitzvah bringing the first of the seven species, the first fruits. The mitzvah of Bikurim shows a Jew's love. What happens? This poor fellow starts the season and he doesn't know, will it rain? Will he succeed? He goes and plows the field. He waters his crops. He gingerly takes care. He puts up fences. He pays a guard. He wants to make sure the animals don't finish his food. He sets up scarecrows. He finds out what's the best fertilizer. He's worked very hard to get his fruit. After all his work, which is the curse of Adam Arishon, right? After all his work, finally there's fruit growing on that tree. So it's an exciting moment for him. After all his investment. And he says, the first fruit is for you, Ribbono Shel Olam. The first fruit I'm bringing to you. So that's a recognition. A person says, that's my most cherished fruit. You know, I always tell the story. There was a true story, unfortunately. There was a couple that at their wedding, someone gave them a very expensive chocolate. Very expensive, like hundreds of dollars for one bar of chocolate. I didn't know such chocolates exist until I heard the story. And one of the couples, the wife found the chocolate. And the husband didn't notice it. And she slipped it into a drawer. And she would take a piece every time without sharing with him. She had a $400, $500 bar of chocolate. And then as she was almost finished with the chocolate, he found it. And here they are in the middle of Sheva Brachos, and he has to face the fact that she took this very expensive chocolate and she kept it all for herself. How do you feel about that? Now, could we have all made the same mistake? We'd like to think not, right? Bikurim says, I take my most cherished and I bring it to the Ribon Shel Olam. You know, it's like the question, what do you donate to people? Say, I'll bring my used talis to the shul. Maybe you should bring the new talis to the shul. What do I donate? People give their used shoes to the poor. It's better than throwing them out, probably. But why not get them good shoes? They also need to walk. Bikurim says, I'm taking my most chosen. And if we go back in history, we see this a recurring theme, right? Kain and Hevel. What do I give the Ribon Shel Olam? Oh, yeah, that's the question from the beginning. So Bikurim is the opposite of that. Bikurim is, I take my most cherished, I bring it to Hashem. I see that the fig has started ripening, and that's an exciting moment. What do? This is holy to Hashem. That shows a person's love. Hashem says, why am I creating the world? There should be affection. There should be connection. That's also the theme of Shabbos. Shabbos is Shabbat Bo Teshuv. Shabbat gives us an opportunity to hit the reset button. On Shabbos, you can get to places you can't get to the rest of the week. It's Shabbat. Why? Because... ask people, what brings them closer to Judaism? A Shabbos table or a fiery speech? Most people, they see a beautiful Shabbos table with a family. That inspires them. Because in Shabbat, it's about love. Shabbat is about connection. It's about affection. And Shabbat, deep down inside, is a connection to the Ribon Shel Olam. And here I want to challenge you. Easy challenge, okay? Try it this Shabbos. You can think of me on Shabbos. Okay? Once. I'm challenging you to one thing. You're going to go down to the Shabbos meal. You're going to eat a delicious Shabbos meal this Shabbos. Take whichever meal you want. Friday night meal, Shabbos morning meal. I would like you to do it Friday night. And as you're eating the meal, I'm not saying your first bite, not your fifth bite. Somewhere in the middle of the meal, stop. And say, I'm going to eat this one spoon in honor of Shabbos. Okay? And then eat that spoon. You can eat everything else because you're hungry. One spoonful. And not when you're full and you really can't eat. You forgot that meal? Wait till the next meal. One spoonful eat in honor of Shabbos. Only one. See how that spoonful tastes. It's a different Shabbos. You could imagine that there are people that their whole meal looks like that. Is my meal an honor? You see it, right? You show up to the meal and there isn't enough for everyone. So I sat next to someone who jokingly said, but the problem is, you know, people sometimes joke, as the saying goes, many a true saying has been said in jest. So there wasn't enough for everyone at the table. So he quickly took a portion, put it on his plate, sat back and said, Lichvoid Shabbos. So I looked at him and I was waiting to see if he was going to eat it. You know, is it a joke or is it an excuse? Is my Kavod Shabbos at the expense of someone else? Could we split it? Do I have to have a big portion or can we do 50-50? Someone else will have. Shabbos gives us the opportunity to connect. Shabbos is a time where Titanag al Hashem. Hashem says, I want you to enjoy on me. The Avodah of Shabbos is, can you enjoy in a holy fashion, but enjoy? So a Jew can connect much more easily. Tshuva on Shabbos is a tshuva that comes from a yearning. It's a tshuva that comes from connection, from an affinity. And that's why on Shabbos it's easy to do tshuva. Nativat Shalom concludes this point and he says, that's why it says in the Medrash Tanchuma that honoring Shabbos is better than 1,000 fasts. Because when a Jew enjoys Shabbos, he's showing his love, his connection, so then his connection to Shabbos is greater than 1,000 fasts. That's the theme that he's been teaching us here.